Covfefe. What the?
Wake up!
Who's there?
It's me, God!
Oh, you must want Pence. I don't know where he is.
I don't want that moron. Besides, he's in his office looking at Catholic schoolgirls on Pornhub. What an asshole. You know, I've been putting up with a lot of your shit.
But I'm making America great again.
Oh, can it, jackass? You don't get to be God by being a moron. Listen, dipshit, I let you get away with all that anti-women crap because, well, men wrote my story. And, I'm a bit of a celebrity myself.
Without a number one rated TV show.
Shut up! I even let the other guy pick your cabinet! Damn it, no wonder I'm the good one. What a bunch of clowns. But I've really got to draw the line on this climate change thing.
But I'm saving millions of American jobs.
Oh, go tell it to Pittsburgh. You know, they really hate you there. It took me 6 whole days to make this planet. I can't just let your dumbass screw it up.
But Bannon said...
Oh, man up. You mentioned that evil little shit again, and I'm letting the other guy have him right now. Then who'll run the country, huh?
The Jewish kid.
Oy vey.
This whole climate change crap is a bunch of hooey. Or maybe it's not. I don't know. Whatever. I am the most popular president ever.
Holy shit, billions of years of evolution has come to this?
Evolution?
Drop it. I never should have let the other guy let you win.
The other guy?
Yeah, and, well, Putin. Why, after 12 billion years, we thought we needed a good laugh. Idiot! Now I need to send Jerry Brown out to fix it, and the fucking Chinese. Just try not to get in the way. Oh, I gotta tell you, I watched your daughter in the shower the other day.
Really? I didn't see you there.
Talk about a second coming.
It's time for Forward Nation Radio. Now here he is, the host of Forward Nation Radio, David Leventhal.
Welcome to Forward Nation Radio with me, David Leventhal. Thank you for joining us. On today's show, we're going to have a not-so-brief look at the news. We'll take a listener question, possibly two, and we will finish our discussion last week about why our economic system is not working as promised. Starting off with the news, we have to start off once again on a somber note talking about terrorism. Getting into the habit of discussing terrorism every week because every week there seems to be another incident. Obviously, we need to get used to this because it seems to be becoming a fact of life. We won't be discussing every terrorist incident, but these last two terrorist incidents this week, I think, are particularly notable, particularly significant, and even more than usual worthy of talking about. London was actually under siege twice this week. First by terrorists, second by our idiot president, who decided in the wake of a terrorist incident that this was the perfect time to grind some more of his axes and to take out his frustration with everybody else in the world to demonstrate his superiority, which to everyone who knows is his inferiority, and attack the mayor of London for their efforts to combat terrorism in London. This would be, it will be significant, this terrorist act, and has the possibility of being very significant. It comes right before an important election for prime minister in Great Britain. The current prime minister, Theresa May, as most of you already know, called for an election a couple months ago at a time when she was riding high and expected that this would be a chance for her to consolidate her power in Parliament and elsewhere. Well, things have turned dramatically in just a few weeks. And now, what was a landslide is seen as potentially a very close race, with some possibility that Theresa May actually lose to Jeremy Corbyn, the leftist Labour candidate. Despite having some problematic skeletons in his closet, those of us who broadcast from the left on progressive radio are excited by the possibility that the left, and we're talking the true left, Bernie Sanders type left, can take control in Great Britain. That election's coming up Thursday, and we will certainly have more about it next week. The other terrorist incident during the week, and this is almost hot off the presses, occurred in Tehran, in Iran. Obviously, London is probably more significant for most Americans, given our tortured relationship with Iran and our obviously much better relationship with Great Britain. Although, to be fair, this is Trump's America, and we're starting to have tortured relationships with everybody right now. What is particularly significant about the terrorist incident in Iran and why it is worthy of mention? The Islamic State has taken credit for it. It's widely presumed that they, in fact, were behind it. But Iran is pretty convinced that Saudi Arabia was behind the Islamic State's attack. And the implications of this, and for widening a rift and maybe opening up all-out war in the Middle East, are somewhat terrifying. People in Iran and experts are pointing out that Saudi Arabia is acting with renewed vigor and muscle around the world, largely because of Trump's visit and shout out to Saudi Arabia. He only attacks democratic nations. And because of his decision to sell Saudi Arabia arms, munitions, military hardware to help them prosecute their war in Yemen and elsewhere. This story we will probably be getting back to a lot. It could have huge implications. Also in the news, the Trump administration drafted new rules limiting the contraception mandate in Obamacare. The employers being required to cover contraceptives. This was done due to moral objections from businesses who felt that they should not be contributing to the ability of their employees to actually, and I'm going to whisper this, have sex. That's right. So the moral objections, this is typical from the right, moral objections are that if we allow people to have contraceptives, they might have sex for some reason other than procreation. First of all, the fact that businesses are allowed to raise moral objections in the first place, as we talked about in this show before, is rather absurd. But second of all, we have this Orwellian result that businesses get to claim or moral objections to people having sex and therefore not cover contraceptives, which will undoubtedly not result in people not having sex, because here's a clue to conservatives. Some people like having sex. In fact, a lot of people like having sex. I sometimes like to believe that some people have liked to have sex with me in the past. At least I'm sure they've enjoyed faking enjoying having sex with me in the past, and that's pretty good too. It's interesting to note that unwanted pregnancies and abortion rates are higher in religious communities that don't do things like distribute and teach contraceptive use. So moral objections will lead to more unwanted pregnancies. But, of course, we'll be rolling back, if Republicans have their way, we will be rolling back maternity care coverage. And, of course, we will be rolling back social welfare programs that will help unwanted children be raised. All of this to promote morals. Some more information on Trump's tax plan has come out. And by tax plan, I mean I think that they found a second napkin with tax information on it. This part of Trump's tax plan is, and I hope you're seated for this one, to reduce dramatically taxes on what's known as pass-through businesses. Businesses that don't pay taxes themselves, but just pass their profits, presumably, onto their owners, and their owners are taxed. Well, this hope you're seated part stems from the fact that this includes Donald Trump's businesses. I know. It's a surprise that Donald Trump would propose a tax cut that would benefit Donald Trump. Assuming that Donald Trump has paid taxes recently. Yeah, we know that something like 12 years ago when they leaked a piece of his tax return, he paid some taxes. The expectation is he hasn't much since then. But with this plan, he's saving himself, presumably, millions and millions and millions of dollars. How much is he saving for people overall? Well, those flaming liberals at Goldman Sachs have estimated that the cost of just this portion of the Trump tax plan, just the plan to reduce taxes on pass-through businesses, will cost American taxpayers, the American government, about $2 trillion over 10 years. $2 trillion over 10 years. What does this mean? Well, understand that when they're not paying taxes, when wealthy business owners are not paying taxes, you can say goodbye to your services and you will pay more for yours. Let's look at this $2 trillion over 10 years in context. Paul Ryan's budget proposal, reflecting Republican values, calls for about $450 billion on discretionary non-military spending a year. $450 billion. The numbers aren't exact, but over 10 years, if it doesn't go up, that's about $4.5 trillion. And we're talking about cutting taxes on wealthy business owners, $2 trillion over that time. Well, that leads us into our next discussion, the Trump infrastructure plan. Some of us remember that one of the things that appealed to even thinking people about Donald Trump, something that he proposed that actually sounded like a good idea to many of us, was that Donald Trump promised to spend $1 trillion on infrastructure. Where is his infrastructure plan? Well, nowhere to be seen. We do have the tax cut plan, and we have the health care plan that's going to dramatically cut taxes on rich people. Where is that $1 trillion going to come from, people ask? Well, eventually, they're presumably going to get around to floating their infrastructure plan. Just not now. Not for a while. But they did indicate one aspect of his infrastructure plan, and it is, as people have feared, privatization. Not an investment in this country, but a fire sale of this country's assets to rich people who could get rich by being sold state assets. National parks, roads, bridges, tunnels. Privatize them. You know, kind of like his hero Vladimir Putin saw happen in Russia when the Russian economy was looted by the oligarchs once communism ended in Russia. Trump wants to privatize air traffic control. We've talked in the past on this show about this Republican religion that privatization always makes things better, when in fact, experience tends to show that privatization makes things more expensive, worse, and diverts public assets to people who are already rich. You can bet that some of Trump's cronies are all set with their private air traffic control companies, ready to take this asset. Okay, and also kind of a somber note, Kathy Griffin made the news this week, not in a positive way. Kathy Griffin was seen with a fake cut-off head of Donald Trump, leading millions of people in America collectively to say, who the fuck is Kathy Griffin? But anyway, let's be clear that this is inappropriate. It's stupid. And in fact, the Democratic response was universal in condemning this act basically showing a dead president. Let's compare the Democratic response to this to the way Republicans tend to respond to their own misbehavior of their own partisans, which has been to lie, to support, to back up in whatever way possible, whatever they've done. Never admit you're wrong. Never criticize any of your supporters. After the Montana congressman, recently elected Montana congressman, was shown assaulting a reporter right before the election, and then proceeded to try to lie his way out of it. What was the response on the right? Was there universal condemnation? Did Fox News and Breitbart come out and say, what an asshole? What a schmuck? That's not the way people in a civilized society behave, especially elected leaders in a civilized society. No, for the most part, the reaction was, what a pussy that reporter was. How did he let himself get attacked so easily? Because this is the typical Republican response against liberals they don't like, or in this case, journalists they don't like. The nastiest slur that you could make about anybody, feminize them. Male or female, but especially males. Feminize them. What a pussy. What a wimp. Why didn't he fight more? What a skinny little guy. It's amazing that Republicans can't get women to have sex with them, even after chasing young girls around their desk a few times in their powerful positions. It's amazing that women support these people with such a low view of women. Democrats did and should condemn Kathy Griffin, and we're doing so here. Let's compare that. I was briefly at the Truth March in Manhattan this weekend. That's right. Such is the state of America that we have to have marches for truth, reminding people that that might be a good idea in our political system. The people there were all very well behaved, civil. The signs that we saw were brilliant. They were clever. They were not aggressive. They did not threaten assault or death or injury. Okay, another really big news, of course, is, as we reported last week, Donald Trump has decided to pull out of the Paris Climate Change Agreement. So this is when Donald Trump finally decides to abide by his promise to pull out? This is something he probably should have done several times in the past, but not in the climate change context. So the United States is now swimming alone. Well, almost alone. It's got Syria and Nicaragua on its side in not being signatories to the Paris Climate Change Agreement. Syria and Nicaragua at least have some sort of excuses for why they're not in it. America has none. As we pointed out a little bit last week, even American businesses are overwhelmingly against the decision to pull out, which apparently was made by Steve Bannon, showing that he is once more reigning triumphant in the White House because of Jared Kushner's troubles, which we will discuss in a moment. But on the side of pulling out of Paris, of course, were those wonderful Koch brothers and Koch Industries, who could never find an issue of planetary destruction that isn't worthwhile as long as they're able to make some money off of it. Living in New York and occasionally having to show up at Lincoln Center, Mayor de Blasio, Governor Cuomo, whoever can have a role in this, take the fucking name off the theater. Having to go, not that I do, but having to go watch the New York City Ballet or other things in David Koch Theater is an insult to to thinking and decent people, which comprise the majority of New York City. Take it down. Maybe you can get some money from the Manson family or somebody else who may not be quite as controversial and quite as offensive. Pulling out of Paris, we're now having the discussion of something called the Blue Exit, or perhaps a Blexit, as we should say. We're talking about the Civil War with the other side seceding, with the sensible northern states seceding. Donald Trump's famously noted that he represents Pittsburgh, not Paris. It's important to note that Pittsburgh immediately came out and said, "Leave us out of this. You may be our president, but we didn't vote for you and we don't like you." Most importantly, as usual, Donald Trump's about 20 years behind the time. I know Pittsburgh is Steel City, has coal mining in its area, but it's not about steel and coal mining. In fact, Pittsburgh's success in the last few years has been due to something that Donald Trump is opposed to: education, research, new technologies. No, Donald Trump was not representing Pittsburgh as he was not representing America. What he was representing was Beijing, which has now leapt to the fore and is happy to fill the vacuum left by the United States exiting from the leadership in addressing climate. Okay, briefly, the latest on Russia and Trump. Jared Kushner has been shown to be trying to establish back channels to the Kremlin through his contacts with a Russian bank. Well, it turns out, latest information to come out, he doesn't have to establish back channels. The bank in question, VEB Bank, is the Russian state, it turns out. Controlled by the Russian state. Actually, I think the Russian prime minister is its chairman of the board or something by law. But it is the Russian state. He was dealing with the Russian state. Turns out that everybody involved has a different story about what was going on. Vladimir Putin, showing his alliance with Donald Trump, started changing his story as soon as it became convenient to do so. He backtracked and said, well, okay, I'd been previously saying that Russia had nothing to do with the cyber attacks against America, but now, okay, maybe it was private Russian citizens and hackers, heroes, patriots, who may have cyber attacked, but the government had nothing to do with it. We'll just keep telling lie after lie until one finally sticks. Now we have a memo that was released by a whistleblower, an NSA memo, that indicates that the NSA has information and has concluded that Russia and Russian-backed hackers have sought and did hack into software going into U.S. voting machines. What exactly they were able to do with that or were planning on doing with that, we don't know. But this brings the whole Russia scandal to a whole nother level. Is it possible that Russia actually hacked our voting software and voting machines in swing states to actually give the election to Trump? Not to fool the American voter, but to actually change the election results. Obviously, we'll have more on this later. We have a question from Michaela from Bayside. I heard that Congress might be trying to get rid of net neutrality again. Is this true? If so, what does this mean for the future of the internet? What does this mean for consumers? What does this mean for people who want to put their stuff out on the internet? It's not Congress that's doing this. It is the FCC, under Trump's appointed FCC chairman, who has announced that they will be seeking and will be rolling back net neutrality. It has not yet taken effect, but they have announced that is their intention. That's what they want to do. What will this mean for consumers, as we briefly discussed on a prior show? This means that your information will have to go through businesses which will now be controlling free speech in America. and we'll be determining not so much who gets to speak and who doesn't get to speak, but who gets to speak quickly and who gets to speak very, very slowly. And the slower you're made to speak, the less people will have any interest in listening to you. This is part of the broad-based propaganda campaign to basically end truth, end journalism in America. And you should be extremely scared. Okay, last week we were talking a little bit about our economic system and how the rationale is it leads to the efficient allocation of scarce resources. And we talked last week about a couple of reasons why that's frequently not true. And that, in fact, based on the way we allocate scarce resources through what people are willing to pay, since we all value money, and with the extent of income inequality, we value money very differently, that means that we've come up with a system where the wealthy tend to have everything. We floated the possibility of considering charging people by time rather than money, which might improve the efficient allocation of scarce resources. Well, we'd like to finish our discussion of market inefficiencies briefly today. Our market system, and understand that market efficiency is the fundamental tenet of conservative ideology against government interference in the market or regulation. Our whole system is premised on the idea of a rational and informed consumer. The problem is, study after study indicates that neither of those things are true. In fact, while people are supposed to be rational, thoughtful actors making intelligent, intellectual decisions when it comes to their purchases, in fact, most of us buy based on emotion or impulse, which is not rationality. Years ago, while I was in school, I worked briefly for a company that sold appliances, a company that's no longer in business, a PC Richard type company. And we were told the first day we came to work, you don't ever let the customer out of the store. Because if the customer leaves the store, says, I'm going to think about it. That seems like a pretty good argument. I want to check one other place out or whatever, but that seems like a pretty good deal you're offering me. They don't come back because retail had already determined the customers may do some research beforehand, but at some point they make the decision to buy and they just buy wherever the hell they are. Gee, that other store was a little bit better. Oh, whatever. This one was fine. Years ago, my family owned shoe stores, and we prided ourselves on customer service. People would come in, and we'd help them a lot to buy a pair of shoes, and they'd go out, they'd be thrilled, and they'd say, I'm so glad you're here. You're wonderful. I appreciate the service I get from this store. At Macy's, they just throw the shoes at me, and they don't give me any help at all. And then a few weeks later, we would notice this customer walking around the mall with a box of shoes in a bag with Macy's on it. I'm sure she meant what she said when she said it to us. But then she found herself in Macy's and it was convenient, and that's when she ends up buying. And information? We can't make rational choices if we don't have information, but we don't have information. A professor and economist, Joseph Stiglitz, several years ago won a Nobel Prize in economics for his theory of information asymmetry, unbalanced information, and how that he demonstrated that that leads to market failure, and in fact has led to substantial market failure worldwide. In any transaction, information is power. The party with information doesn't want to willingly share it with the party without information. That leads to an imbalance, and it leads to a transaction that does not lead to the efficient allocation of scarce resources. Look at the recent FLAP in New York, when it was proposed and ultimately passed that restaurants need to list their calorie count of foods the argument was, well, it's a hardship for companies to do that, for restaurants to do that. I have another theory of why restaurants were so averse to that. I remember when I was a kid, I had a friend whose father owned a couple of McDonald's. And I remember him saying to me at some point, don't ever order a large fry if you go to McDonald's. It's a bad deal. It's not worth it. You're better off buying two small fries. How would you know that? Not many people are buying a large fry, a small fry, emptying one packet, putting the other packet in the other one, and trying to see which one has more French fries for the money. But nowadays, for some of us who could do basic math, and I realize that rules out many of us, though we now have cell phones that can do it for us, we can figure out by the calorie count which is the better bargain. If a small French fries has 400 calories and sells for $1, and a large French fries sells for $2 and has 600 calories, you know that you're better off buying two small French fries. You get more calories for the buck. In all kinds of ways, businesses who always have more information than their consumers are doing what they can to prevent information sharing. The internet promises all kinds of opportunities to consumers through reviews. So what have we seen? Internet reviews have become completely compromised. Businesses paying people to write reviews to distort the information so the public doesn't have the information they need to get to make good decisions. And finally, the last bit of market failure that we have comes from a concept known as market externalities, which do not get enough discussion in this country. Market externalities are the reason why you overeat when grandma and grandpa are taking you out to dinner or when you're on an expense account. Market externalities, often negative, sometimes positive, occur when some of the costs or benefits of a particular transaction are borne by those not a party to that transaction. If I decide to buy and use a product and you decide to sell it to me, all the costs and benefits of that transaction should be borne by us. But that tends to not be the way it works frequently. An obvious example of a market externality, of course, is cigarettes. If I decide to smoke cigarettes and I don't, and you decide to sell them to me, people around me get disgusted, smell bad, and if they're around me enough, might get sick. Those costs are not part of the transaction. They should be part of the transaction. And what we need to do to promote market efficiency is to internalize externalities. How do we do that with cigarettes? Simple. We add a cigarette tax that hopefully somewhat estimates the external costs of cigarettes and internalizes them by adding them to the seller and the buyer. Once those costs are internalized, what happened? People smoked a lot less cigarettes. It turns out when you don't get to dump your costs onto other people, it changes your decision making. Where else do we see market externalities? Well, pollution is the greatest example of a negative market externality. We have pollution as much as we do in large part because wealthy people tend to pollute, poor people tend to pay the price. According to Oxfam, the world's richest 10% is responsible for half of the world's pollution, while the bottom half of the world contributes 10%. But the poor disproportionately bear the costs of that pollution. Wealthy people have the ability to get away from what they are doing. A recent estimate was that 4,400 people a day in China die from air pollution caused by burning coal. 4,400 people a day. Coal is being burned and used primarily by wealthy people. It's killing primarily poor people. Airborne coal pollution, by the way, was killing about 13,000 Americans a year, according to the Clean Air Task Force. In 2010, it's down to 7,500. Understand that when Trump talks about bringing coal jobs back, a lot of what he's saying is, we'll let you keep killing other people for free. We won't make the coal companies pay for that, because if they had to pay for that, people would switch to solar. An International Monetary Fund study in 2015 found that economic and environmental externalities of fossil fuel consumption amounted to nearly $5 trillion with a T dollars per year, or 33% more than the entire U.S. federal budget. The price of gasoline in America should be more than double what it is now if the costs of burning a gallon of gasoline were incorporated. A few years ago, to date, the most comprehensive climate change study ever conducted in Great Britain, was completed. And at the announcement ceremony of the report, Sir Nicholas Stern, head of Britain's Economic Service at the time, who was in charge of doing the study, came out and pointed out how market externalities constituted market failure. And in discussing climate change, he noted, "This is the greatest market failure the world has ever known." A true conservative would not be in favor of promoting market failure. Someone whose job it is to devote more and more of the world's resources to the wealthy, like Donald Trump or the current Republican Party, is perfectly happy with that. Why do we want to walk away from the climate change agreement? Because wealthy American businesses and wealthy Americans who buy SUVs and pickup trucks at a time when we should be buying electric cars and hybrids that get 50 miles a gallon. We buy SUVs and pickup trucks in large part because we dump the costs onto unsuspecting people. All cars in America under law right now need to be sold with backup cameras. You know why that is? Because too many children were getting killed by SUVs backing up. We now have a new term called front overs, describing people getting run over from the front because of SUVs and pickup trucks that are so large that people cannot see children standing in front of the vehicle. Many of the problems caused by SUVs come from the burning of gasoline, which other people pay for, or from accidents and deaths that other people suffer, not the people who made the decision to buy the huge vehicles. I'm going to finish with a quick story, one of my favorite stories. Years ago, I was exiting a parking lot to a small shopping center on the Long Island Expressway Service Road. It's a busy street. People tend to go pretty fast. And I'm trying to exit this parking lot. I'm inching forward, and I cannot see a thing. There is a huge SUV parked right at the corner, blocking my view of the road. I inch out. I think, should I get out and look? But by the time I got back in, someone would be coming. It wouldn't be useful. So I stuck my face out enough that hopefully someone coming would see me, and I put it into gear and I gunned it, closed my eyes and prayed. Didn't close my eye, didn't pray, but you get the point. Turns out I was fortunate I wasn't hit. But all I kept thinking was, if I get hit right now, two people will be involved in an accident. The one person who will have absolutely no responsibility for this accident will be the one person who caused it. The person who parked the huge vehicle at a spot where people cannot see the road. And I thought, if I get hit now, I'm going to get arrested. Because I'm going to get out of my car, I'm going to grab my tire iron, and I'm going to beat the shit out of the SUV. And when the police come to drag me off, I'm going to be screaming, "But I'm internalizing market externalities! I'm internalizing market externalities!" And maybe I won't get locked up. Maybe I'll just get committed. Anyway, that's the show for today. You've been listening to Forward Nation Radio with me, David Leventhal. Thanks, as always, for joining us. Like Looking Forward, go to forwardnationradio.com. That's forwardnationradio.com. And get the full experience. You'll see the video from this and every episode there and on our YouTube channel as well. Don't you want to listen to this because there's a change. Don't miss the next Forward Nation Radio podcast on Podbean at podbean.com. If you like what you've heard, like us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel, please. Tell your friends, spread the word. Forward Nation Radio. See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward Nation Radio with David Leventhal.